Welcome, everyone. My name is Derek Smith, and I'm born and raised Hoosier, the state of Indiana. I know there's one fellow Hoosier in here, and I met the first people I've ever met from New Mexico this morning. So thank you all for being here today. This is a topic, selling a business is a topic that's really popular nowadays. As many of you have heard, there's a baby boomer generation that's retiring and passing on businesses. So it's a very popular topic, and I'm excited to walk through it today. My presentation this morning will be a bit different. It's much more foundational. It won't get into the X's and O's of how to sell a business and all of that. It's much more about really understanding what God's calling is for you and then choosing a path, a process that aligns with whatever that goal might be. So my presentation, maybe 20 minutes. I'll be very short, but hopefully it's an impactful presentation and you guys can walk away with some things to think about. The rest of the time that we have, the 15, 20 minutes that we have together, I'm going to have Kevin come up. Kevin and I met earlier today, and he's an expert on the X's and O's of selling a company. But if there are any questions, we can use that entire rest of the time for Q&A and any type of discussion that would be helpful for all of you, and I'll do my best to answer those questions. I work for a family-owned business called Main Street. We're an investment holding company, and we have investments in real estate and manufacturing and building materials distribution. And my heart is in being an entrepreneur and growing companies, and I just love this topic. I love the thought of preserving legacy and culture and growing companies for not only financial but societal and eternal returns. So we're going to cover three topics this morning. What does it mean to sell or transition your company? That would be the first topic that we'll talk about. After that, we'll talk about how do you sell, if you choose to sell, with a kingdom mindset? And we'll dig into that a little bit. And the third topic is how do you get started? And this is all aligned with the conference theme of thirsting for righteousness. So what does it mean to sell or transition? A lot of folks talk about retirement, but that may not be the motivation for selling or transitioning your company. I personally have no intention of ever retiring, and I know it's easy for me to say now because I still have a lot of energy. But I've always loved the quote, "I'm going to die with my boots on." And we were made to work, to do something productive. And I'm a believer in work and all the good things that it can provide. So I want everyone to know that this is not just about retirement. You could have shifting priorities in your own life. You could have a spouse or a child with health issues that causes you to take away attention from your business. You could have a new calling, a new ministry that God has called you to. So it's not just about retiring that would motivate you to even think about selling or transitioning your company. You can also transition leadership without selling your business. I'm going to focus today mostly on selling, but transition doesn't necessarily mean an ownership change. And these four bullet points today, life choices to consider, these are things that I would challenge each of you to ask yourself if you are a business owner. And I'm going to try to use the word steward. I looked at the core principles of FCCI, and it says we're not owners, we're stewards. So I'm going to do my best to use the word steward. But when I say steward, I mean you're a business owner. So these are a few questions. Do you want to continue to own your company but pay a management team to operate it? Do you want to sell to your management team, to a family member, or to a third party? Most companies today are selling to third parties. What do you want your role to be after you sell the business or after you transition to your management team? And do you want to do it all at once, or do you want to phase this over time? These are life choices for each of you to consider. I believe Jeff Rogers is talking a lot about a selling to maybe a family member. So there's a topic on that today. Again, this will be much more foundational. So how do you sell with a kingdom mindset? A lot of the world of selling companies today is very focused on number one. And that can be a righteous endeavor. I'm not here to say that if you want to maximize value, and I'm going to define value today as a financial return. I actually view value as a kingdom, societal, and financial. But for purposes of this presentation, value is defined as purchase price, maximizing the price of your business. Do you want to fulfill other priorities, such as maintaining and preserving your culture, your mission, your legacy, your commitment to your community that you're in? And depending on which one you want to really fulfill, how do you manage the process to achieve that goal? With most companies today, there is a competing priority between maximizing value and achieving other priorities. It's a sliding scale. If you maximize value, there's going to be trade-offs. If you want to fulfill other priorities, there's going to be trade-offs as well. I'm going to talk a little bit, suggestions about how to balance both later on in my presentation. If anyone has questions while I'm going through this, feel free to ask. So if you feel God is calling you to maximize value, that can be a very good thing. And I'm not here to say it's good or bad. It can be a great thing. If God calls you to fund an endowment or some missionary work, if you say, you know what, I don't want to have to worry about the business anymore. I have a new calling. I want to get out of this business completely and pursue this. This may be the path that you should go down. And these are kingdom-oriented drivers. They're not self-centered reasons. There are trade-offs to consider when you maximize value. If you have a strategic buyer of your business, which would be a competitor, a customer, a vendor that bought your business, you're likely going to have employees who are let go because there's duplicate positions and things like that. There's a really good chance of that happening. There's a somewhat good chance of relocation. They buy you, they fold you into their business, and they locate you wherever their headquarters might be. And there's definitely going to be a new culture and a new mission within your business. If it's a financial buyer, an example of that would be private equity. They have a 5 to 8 year buy, flip mandate. They're going to buy your company and flip it. Most private equity, not all, but most have that mandate. I actually fit in the financial buyer seat, but we don't have a buy flip mandate. But most do, and there's a bottom line focus. To achieve maximum value, whoever the purchaser is, whether it's a financial or strategic, they're going to use a lot of debt to buy your company, to pay for this maximum value. And therefore, more debt on your business. And a lot of boomers I know are very proud of being debt-free. The buyer will most likely use a lot of debt to buy your company. And therefore, the business risk goes up. And therefore, the sustainability, the long-term sustainability, could be at risk. Now, a proper amount of debt is not a bad thing. And people use a lot of debt to buy companies every day. But it's a reality that I think going into this, if you want to maximize value, you all should be aware of. Before I move on to the next slide, I just want to have a brief conversation on what is value, from speaking from a financial return perspective. I love the quote, all price is not equal. So if someone offers you $10, that doesn't actually mean you're going to get $10 at the closing. You may only get $5 at closing, and then $5 over a period of time. So the structure, not just the top line price when someone offers you for your company, it's not just the top line price, but it's the structure of how that's paid and when it's paid, and also the contractual obligations that you have to the buyer of your company. Be mindful of all three things. I think too many sellers of companies get hung up on what's the purchase price of my company and don't look at the structure and the contractual obligations. And Kevin can probably speak a lot to that as well. I keep thinking my computer's behind me. If your goal is to fulfill other priorities, you want to get a good value for your company, but you also want to preserve the culture, you want to maintain the customer reputation that you've built. In some cases, your father or your mother started the company and has built it. Your grandparents may have started the company. It's a 50, 70-year-old business in a lot of cases. I've seen many of those. You have built a strong reputation in your community with your customers, with your employees. You've employed generations of families. If you want to protect that and maintain that, these are other priorities that you have to be thinking about when you sell your business. And it is can often compete with achieving maximum value for your business. If you want to fulfill these other priorities, the trade-offs to consider is you may most likely are going to get a lower price because of the process, which I'll talk about, and you will likely get less cash at closing. If someone offers you $10, you're not going to get $10. You may get $5 at closing, but $10 paid over time. And I'll talk a little bit why that is. It's mostly because if you want to achieve these things, you don't run the typical investment banker or broker auction process. And I'll get into what that auction process means next few slides. So if you choose, if you feel God is calling you to maximize the value of your company, here's the process that I would be thinking about and be aware of and be educated on to achieve that. Number one, you're going to hire an advisor, a sell-side advisor. This is going to be a broker or an investment banker that will represent you in the market. It is normal and common for these advisors to be incentivized already to get you maximize the value of your company. They're paid a percent of the price that they can get from prospective buyers. If that's not your goal, and we'll talk about this, change how they're paid. I talked to Clint this morning from Ronald Blue and Company, and they have a unique way to get paid so that it's not all about maximizing the financial value of your company. In preparation for maximizing value, you want to postpone and reduce cost, because your business, for all the great things that it does, if you want to maximize value, it's going to be judged on your profitability and cash flow. That's as simple as it. They'll look at other things, but when it comes down to coming up with the valuation of your company, it's going to be based on the profitability and cash flow. So the better you can make that look, the more value you're likely going to get. The process will go like this. You sign up with a sell-side advisor. That sell-side advisor runs an auction process. They solicit as many bids as possible. So volume is key. They filter all those bids based on the financial value offered. It's not based on fit with you and your team and your culture. It's based on financial value offered. And the sell-side advisor and you are going to share the least amount of information possible. And you're going to be on a strict timeline because you want decisions to be made and you want this to be an efficient process. This is the very common way to sell a business. And most businesses out there are sold this way. If your goal is to fulfill other priorities and get a good value for your company, the first thing that you have to do is change how the sell-side advisor is paid. If you remember, I said the sell-side advisor is paid based on a percentage of the purchase price that you get for your company. Change how they're paid so that they're not incentivized by value, but by identifying the right fit, the buyer that is the right fit for your company. How do you prepare for this? I mentioned this sliding scale between achieving other priorities and maximizing value and how those things can compete. There's one company out there that has actually been able to balance this, and it's an example that everyone knows is Chick-fil-A. What they've been able to do is take all these other considerations like culture and people and community and made those things serve the purpose of profit. They can prove that their culture, their people, their way of doing things actually serves the purpose of generating profit. And if you can prove that in your business, whoever buys it is not going to change the people or the culture or the mission of the company, because those things actually deliver financial results. Buyers are going to care about financial results, and if you can show all those things lead to generating profit, they're not going to change it. So for example, if a big private equity group bought Chick-fil-A, would they open on Sunday? If you look at this from a pure financial perspective, you can say, I can increase my sales double digit. I can buy Chick-fil-A, and I can immediately increase my sales double digits if I open one other day a week. Think of how many people that would like to go. How many times on Sunday have you wanted to go to Chick-fil-A and it's closed? But I don't care who buys, if Chick-fil-A ever sold, I don't care who the buyer is, I don't think they would open up on Sunday, whether they're a believer or not. Because Chick-fil-A has proven that their way of business actually not only does good, but it also generates results. And so consider that in your business. If you want to achieve these other priorities and get a good value, you have to show how your people and your culture generate profitability. So the sale process would go something like this if you were going to do things a little bit differently. Instead of soliciting bids, you would proactively go out and identify buyers that align with your mission. Go out and approach them and talk to them about your plans. Share your goals for the company. Interview each of those potential buyers. Instead of them asking you all the questions, you ask them a lot of questions about what their intentions are and how they run a company, and see if their values and their mission and their vision match up with what you do. The last piece is really powerful here. When you're going through this process today, I mentioned this, the typical way to do it is share the least amount of information possible. So you want a buyer to make a decision based on limited information, because the more they find out, the theory goes they're going to pay less for your company. That isn't necessarily true. The more truthful and transparent you can be about your company, the better chances you're going to find the right fit, the right buyer for your business. And so I would encourage you, if you want to achieve these other priorities, during the process, be fully transparent and truthful with the buyer and your employees. So what to get started on? Number one, think about the life choices to consider that I mentioned in the first slide. What are your personal goals? What is God calling you to do? Is He calling you to transition your company but maintain ownership? Is He calling you to sell to a family member? Your management team? How's your management team going to finance that? Is He encouraging you to sell to a third party? What is it? The foundational questions before you get into the X's and O's of how to execute on that, think about those things. Think about what you want to do after you sell the business or transition it. The second thing is, regardless of what path you go down, build a solid management team. I don't care if you want to maximize value, you want to fulfill other priorities. You cannot go wrong by building a good management team. And what I mean by that is a talented team with bench depth. Any buyer of your company is going to really value a solid management team. That is going to be huge, but that's going to require time, investment, and tough decisions on all of your parts who are business owners, business stewards in this room. You may have family members in the business you're going to have to let go today because you're going to get penalized for that later. You may have people that have children of folks that have worked in your business forever and you're doing a nice gesture by hiring them. You're going to have to make the tough decisions to get them out and bring in people that can truly replicate the value that you've brought to the company for so many years. And that's hard. And this one is kind of controversial. Be willing to offer equity-like compensation to your management team. You can own 100% of the company, and you can incentivize your management team like owners without giving up any equity. That is a great way to attract really talented people from bigger companies because they can come work for a smaller business and be compensated like an owner and have responsibility and authority. Consider that and talk to professionals about how you might do that. And the last piece here is pick an advisor. Pick someone to work with you, prepare. This is a 3 to 5 year process. I want you to determine what pathway you want to go down. It can take 3 to 5 years from beginning to end. And so pick them early, align their incentives with your goals, and move forward. Yes, sir.
How do you do that practically in an area? Like I'm in Southern California. I've got one of my clients wants to sell their business, and they've interviewed like one or two people that they didn't like or the fees were high. I mean, is there a vetting process out there that either recognize, professional association or...
Yeah.
How do you practically do that?
Well, I would start by talking with your professional network. So your legal counsel, every company has these, legal counsel, accountant, and banker, your commercial banker that you work with. Start talking to them about your goals, asking for references of folks. And then I would definitely interview 5 to 10 potential advisors. Interview several. Talk to them about the incentive piece. Because the typical way is, say, 3 to 5% of the enterprise value of your company, they get a cut of it. Challenge that. Challenge the status quo if that's not your entire goal, is to maximize value. And the right advisor will take a different fee structure for their clients. I don't know if that's helpful, Chuck, to your question. Anybody else have any thoughts on that, how to find a good advisor?
Well, now I just had a different question.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
If you're trying to work a deal selling to like a prime person in the company, do you need to get an advisor to work through that, or is that...
You may not need a sell-side advisor, but I would definitely have legal counsel or an accountant working with you who has M&A, mergers and acquisitions expertise. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because you don't want to get that wrong.
Right.
Plus, you want to get the right structure, because I'm guessing if you have a key employee that you want to sell your business to, they don't have the money to buy your company. And so you've got to set up the right process and the right payment structure to do that.
Yeah. Just on the selling the advisor thing, you probably want to look at your state. A lot of states don't allow people to operate within their boundaries. So talking to like the Board of Regulations and Licensing actual California, things in California, will often give you the idea of who's allowed to do business and what sort of their qualifications should be, depending on the type of business that you're selling. Because it is difficult to find people who are, you know, not necessarily a swindler, who, you know, speak awesomely and then don't really know what they're talking about when it comes down to the wire.
Yeah, Kevin.
I think that you should have a good, solid financial advisory relationship if you don't have one. And a strong financial advisor will also often be a very good resource to connect you with people who can, advise you, provide sell-side advisory services.
Yeah, I'm their CPA and financial advisor, so... Okay. I'm fulfilling that role. I'm just having a hard time because in the state of California, it's through the Board of Real Estate that the brokers are typically vetted through. So, and then there's business brokers that have not been able to find a robust process to kind of vet.
Right.
References, maybe.
People yeah.
Yeah.
Just start. Referral.
Okay.
Absolutely. I believe you may have a question, Tim.
As a business owner, and I'm like you, I never really thought I would ever retire. I worked harder, probably. My wife and I both work in the business. And we bought a little kitty that's turned into a lion, and sometimes I don't know. I mean, it just. In the industry that I am, there are people that are buying and looking for the buyer. And, we do have a lot of concern about our employees.
Absolutely.
Stuff like that. But we've kept putting it off and thinking about it and put it off and thinking about it. I don't really want to leave it, but on the other hand, there are things, issues, and we have just kind of entered into some of these areas right here. And it's new territory.
Absolutely.
And your emotions kind of get, how do you do? Well, I paid a lot of money for that. I made that, I painted that wall. All of those things factor in. They're very emotional things in your life. And I don't know what it'll be like the day that I turn around.
Yeah.
And it was never about money. Yeah. It really was never about money. And we've always felt the Lord gave it to us.
Yeah, He does.
And how you handle it and let it go. Because we've had the good, the bad, and the ugly. We fought at different times. We balance each other very well. Huh. I do what I do very well, and she manages what I do. One thing I see, it's like, while losing a family member or something, obviously it's not a life, a living, breathing life, but to some degree. And people say, it was really funny because I went to a class reunion where all of my peers grew up and stuff, and we're sitting at a table, and every one of them hated what they did their whole life. Honestly, God, I was sitting there, I never looked back at that empty place, and I thought to myself, and what Zig Ziglar spoke into our lives about, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah.
Well, we're kind of like unique, because I really enjoy going to work. I do. And when you turn around, you leave that, but seeing some of this, right here, right now, looking at it, those are some of the areas that we're really, really dealing with today.
Absolutely.
And we just started working, we've had friends in our lives, and we've got some friends that have, they could fall into a mud puddle and come out looking white.
Yeah.
But we've worked very hard for everything that we've done. And it's, it's always, God has always given us the manna, but we've had to take a walk to get it.
Yeah.
Didn't fall down the chimney. And, when you let it go, we do have family in the business, but we're a blended family to some, at some degree. And we have a lot of things that we're looking at. The emotional part of going through that is tough.
Very tough. One of the most emotional things you could ever go through. And by the way, it's it can be a very great thing to have family members in the company.
It can and it can't be. I don't want to be negative about it, but I have the two sons that I have in the business, and I love them equally. My oldest son is my blood, you know, from my prior marriage, and my younger son, I've had him since he's been a little baby. And they get along with each other, but their personalities are absolutely opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you see the one who, my oldest son, who is in the business, and I'm not one to take all the time up, but his wife, a very godly woman, passed away early from cancer. And he remarried and married a non-believer. And his whole life has changed. Even though he was a pastor, he did all the stuff right. Today he's, you know, a little bit different. My youngest son looks at me and his mom and he said, you know, Dad, I see how you guys have worked and put your blood into this, but he said, I don't have that. I don't want to be there. He don't want to be there 18 hours a day and sleep on the floor and go out there and meet customers' expectations. I'll be here as long as you are, but I don't want the keys to the door.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's common.
I was going to say, you might, you know, make a plan for your, what you want to do first.
Well, that
then yes. You're not going from something, you're going to something.
Amen.
Yes. We don't, you know, we don't intend to quit. You know, whenever I tell someone my age and treat them different, I don't like that. You know, I mean, being really honest. I mean, I don't look at sitting down on the porch. That's not what I want to do at all. I just realize that sooner or later that decision will be made for me.
It will, yeah, and you want to get on top of it and start planning today. Whether it's in 5 years, 10 years, or 15 years, it doesn't matter because tomorrow actually is not guaranteed for any of us.
Oh, sure. That's right.
And if you want your business to continue and the legacy to continue and an opportunity to continue, you've got to have a plan. You've got to have a team that can run the business. That's, you should be able to go on vacation for a month and nothing, and the company continues.
A good team, and she's probably been more, like I built the soldiers, and she's built the administrative staff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we battle it. It's not like it's pleasant every day and we get up in the morning and thank you. I mean, usually we're both testing each other's decisions, and it's a very difficult business to get good talent in. We've got longevity with some of our people.
Yes.
And been in business 34 years. This is our 34th year.
Wow.
Been blessed, but we're looking now, and again, it's like getting ready to put your kid in child care. So it's pretty tough.
So do you guys consult like with businesses that are thinking of transitioning and all that?
I don't. I'm always happy to be helpful, but I'm actually a buyer of businesses. I would fit into that third-party category that we talked about. And I'm here to say that selling to a third party can be a great thing. And your management team can stay in place. So it doesn't sound as appealing to sell to an outsider. But there are good buyers out there that are third parties, whether it be a strategic buyer or a financial buyer, that would have alignment with your mission, your vision, and your values. You just have to go out and proactively find that group and build your own management team internally who can carry on those things once you're not there. The new ownership comes in, they have your management team. You've done your job of making sure those two groups are aligned, and your management team that you've built is there to preserve what you've built over the last 30 years.
What about companies that sell to their employees?
That can be a great thing. In ESOP, yeah. Very familiar with a company that did that, and they've done very well at it. You had a question?
You say you're a third party, and you were saying third parties usually a 10-year flip or a 5-year flip.
They are.
What do you do?
We don't have a mandate because we're a family-owned investment holding company, but we are we would be considered a financial buyer. Not all private equity groups have investors, an investor base that requires them to buy and sell within a 5 to 10 year period.
So you like to hang on to them?
We do, yeah, absolutely. As Warren Buffett said, Warren Buffett would fit into that category, by the way. Everyone knows Warren Buffett. The Coke Industries out of Wichita, Kansas, they would all be considered financial buyers, but they don't have any sort of buy-flip mentality. Their thought is, it's too hard to find a good business, so why, once you find one, would you sell it in 5 to 10 years? It makes no sense, and we feel the same way. I mean, we may look at 100 businesses a year just to find one that is a good fit financially, culturally. So why would we sell it? All that work just to sell in 5 to 10 years. But those are good examples of financial buyers without a mandate. Berkshire Hathaway, Koch Industries. And there are other groups out there like that. There are family offices out there, if you're familiar with the term family office. Family offices are a great option. They don't have a buy-flip mandate to them. Yes?
I'm going to speak to one of the points that you made about the information that you disclose to a potential buyer. Broadly, I agree with your point. I don't really disagree with your point. When you're selling to a purely financial buyer, I think you do tend to have a lot more control over, you try to control the information that is provided to the other side very tightly. You control the timing of delivery of that information too, especially if you're selling to a competitor. Where if the deal doesn't go through and they have your information, it could be very damaging. One, in any deal, a good non-disclosure agreement is really, really critical. But, as an overall, just from a kingdom mind, if you're a kingdom-minded business, so I'm a lawyer, that's why I handle these kinds of transactions a lot. So from a kingdom-minded perspective, I think that transparency and truthfulness is still your job, even when you're selling to a purely financial buyer.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, though you're dealing with a party that may not have the same goals, may have a different approach than you, you're still, your job is still to represent Christ to the buyer. And you really, I've seen some pretty interesting things where, just the way a seller or a buyer conducted themselves really made a big impact on the other side personally. From a legal standpoint, you want to be transparent and truthful. And, if every company has warts, they all have problems, there's no perfect company. And so it's better to, it's better to plan ahead in that 3 to 5 year time window, really take a good hard look at your company with your financial advisor, your accountant, your lawyer, kind of do a little bit of a scoping exercise and see what are the warts that you need to deal with and deal with them proactively, because that will help you make the sale process easier and build trust with the buyer, also maximize your price. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, you need to be honest about the warts that exist, because you can negotiate through those things. And yes, the warts in a business affect price or terms or things like that. But the more you deal with that up front and negotiate through it, the more satisfied and happy the buyer's going to be, you're going to be, the less likely there's going to be a problem or an issue that destroys trust or leads to litigation or means money coming out of your pocket back to the buyer on the back end. That can get really, really ugly. So you'll actually save money by being forthright and honest and dealing with it in a way that really honors them by your
transparency. Yep. Thank you, Kevin. Well, our time is up. Hopefully this has been a I believe it is. I think we're to go to 11. I hope this was a impactful use of time for all of you. I've certainly enjoyed the opportunity to speak here, and pray that all of you would go forward and be proactive in your plans and work hard to show how your culture actually impacts results. Build a great management team. Pick a really good advisor to work with, financial planner, investment banker, a broker, accountant. I'd encourage you all to work really hard on that and think through these life choices as well. Think about what do you want to do before you go out and find the advisor. Think about these questions first. What do you want to do? What is God calling you to do with your company? Thank you all very much for your time.